Blog Talk Radio.
I'm a truth terrorist. I'm a knowledge gangster. I'm a black history hitman. I'm a lie killer, urban gorilla. I gotta be a roughneck.
Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers. And fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, trying to make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro.
Show,
they got me started, lying hearted, I'm the new Mufasa. And I'm all about Umoja, first in Gruz Usaba. Let's bring back the black families, we need our father. Single mama, son and daughter, that's root of the problem. Wise up, we wise up, unity so powerful. Black banks, black schools, black owned, black power moves. You telling lies, you think this shit gon' be televised. Black power, be scared guys, that be standing there like they paralyzed, huh? We say fuck the system, cause we above the system. We keep ARs and pistols, shotguns that's worth the crystal. But that's for self-defense, make sure we have no issues. Be sure to leave it at the door if you have it with you. This for them freedom fighters, that lost their freedom. Until they freedom, we screaming carpe diem. This for the general, King Khalid Muhammad. We gon' make your day a holiday, I fucking promise. Free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. That 13th Amendment, tryna make a slave of me. You can lock my body, can't trap my mind, not forever be free.
Okay,
free the Black Panthers, FCBP. Stand for free the Black Panthers, and fuck the black police. Feds infiltrated our movements for black leadership roles. But we still here, finna build here, fuck coin tail pro.
RBG, 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 RBG. My sisters, my brothers, the council, the elders, shit, that's really all I need. We suited, we booted, don't do it, you stupid, we head to the armory. Black woman and goddess, regardless, my heart just don't fuck with misogyny. Bullshit, I don't tolerate it. Melanated, so you gotta hate it. Barack fucked up another conversation. Trump finna get inaugurated, damn. Unify or die, NBPP.org.
First and foremost, the new Black Panther Party, no other Black Panther Party, we are not violent. We are for self-defense and self-determination. The most violent group in this country are the police. What is taking place by the police department to black people across this country is ethnic cleansing and genocide. It has escalated since the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated in 2008. We have a people who are only 13% of the population, yet we make up 80% of the prisons. We have 50% unemployment rate in the black community, and it's actually even more than that because they're not counting our people that are in the prison. The 13th Amendment says you cannot be made a slave or indentured servant unless you commit a crime. The 14th Amendment forced our people to be subjects of this government. We never had any say in that. We need our own nation.
Black power, black power, black power, black power, black power. You're listening to the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense Nightly Broadcast. Happy New Year. It's 2022. We're broadcasting to you on New Year's night, tonight's program. We will be wrapping up the last day of Kwanzaa, which is today, Habari Ghani, happy Kwanzaa, with the principles and the understanding of what Kwanzaa is will be tonight's topic. And particularly, we're going to speak about the celebration, the origin of Kwanzaa, and its connection to our African culture. Today is the seventh day, the last day, which is Imani, which represents faith. And with that being said, especially in these days and times, our faith is definitely what we need to take us forward into this new year and beyond. Faith in our Creator, faith in ourselves, faith in our families, faith in our community. The times and what must be done. We must be self-determined. We must work in cooperative work. We must be unified. We must be working to achieve cooperative economics. We must be using our creativity, understanding our purpose. These are all principles of the Nguzu Saba, in which we are celebrating or recognizing at the end of 2021 going into 2022. So tonight we will play a few clips. We're going to play the first clip will be understanding the seven principles of Kwanzaa. It will be presented by the gentleman who is supposed to be responsible for bringing Kwanzaa to official celebration. However, these principles are eternal and have always been a part of our African culture. That will be Milana Karanga. We will hear from Milana Karanga about Kwanzaa. We will also hear tonight from Brother Michael Imhotep, who did a very powerful presentation entitled From Kwanzaa to Wakanda, Connecting the Principles of Kwanzaa with Our African Culture. And then we will wrap up the program hearing a little bit from the founder of Kwanzaa, Milana Karanga. So we're going to make sure we start off the year in a positive energy and keeping our political education at the forefront, as well as keeping our culture as an African people, a new African people, that is. We are a new African because we have become a people who have went through so many things and have yet to even have our full potential. Even as we are evolving, we can reach and know the greatness of our ancestors that built the mighty empires of Mali and the mighty dynasties of Kemet and Kush and Nubia, and even here in the West and the Olmecs. We know that we the original of the entire planet originated from the motherland of Africa. We've been through a lot, from chattel slavery to colonialism, to Jim Crow, to the modern Jim Crow right now with this prison industrial complex. Yet we still are enduring, and we are coming under all kind of attacks, but we are in fact strengthening. We see some weaknesses being exposed, but that's part of the process. As we evolve and as a new African people, we are clear that we are not only Black nationalists, but we are Pan-Africanists. And our evolution as revolutionaries must always be one where we're constantly studying and training and applying wisdom and making our visions, our goals manifest. So with that, brothers and sisters, we're going to start off the program. And again, Abarigani, Black Power, Ashe.
This season of the celebration of Kwanzaa comes at a time of heightened hope and historic turning, not only for us as a people, but for this country and the world. There is a rightful and widespread sense that we are on the verge of new possibilities to repair and renew the world, to reorder our lives and priorities and engage in practices that promise new ways to relate to each other and the world. And there is also this companion sense, more developed than it has been for some time, that if we are ever to have a just, peaceful, and good society and world, we must respect each other, work together, and share the good and goods of the world in a just and equitable way. It is this model and moral stance of cooperatively creating, cultivating, harvesting, and sharing good in the world that grounds and shapes the vision, values, and practice of Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa's ancient origins are indeed centered around the celebration and harvesting and sharing of good in the world. And this celebration is rooted in cooperative projects of gathering together in harmony, planting the seeds and possibilities of good, cultivating them with required care and consideration, and patiently working to bring them to fruit, flower, and fulfillment. For we know there can be no harvest, and indeed no hope or sharing of good without the cooperative mutual respect for work that makes possible and produces the good we all want and deserve. Kwanzaa is also created in the context of the Black Freedom Movement. And so it not only borrows from the ancient teachings around the harvesting of good and the sharing of that good, but it also stresses the cooperative nature and need of the struggle required to achieve a shared goal. It is the lesson of life, struggle, and teaching of Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, Fannie Lou Hamer, Malcolm X, Martin King, Amilcar Cabral, Yah Santiago, and countless other ancestors of heavy weight and worth in the world. So that there is no hope without struggle.
That's right.
A lot of people really believe that the election of Obama means the end of history.
Yes.
And that there's nothing else we need to do. But that's not real.
No.
That's not real at all. What Obama's election represents is a distinguished and important mark in the long journey and unfinished fight to expand the realm of human freedom and flourishing in the world. It's an important marker, but it's not the end of history. Also, we must understand that it was Black people that brought him there through struggle.
Right.
Those people that opened the way so that he could walk through. Those people that gave him spiritual and moral grounding.
Yes.
Dr. Reverend Jeremiah Wright and Trinity United Church of Christ.
See? Right.
People talk about white people elected Obama. That's not real. Only 43% of white people voted for Obama.
Right.
Keep that in mind, because the European wants to pretend this shows political maturity on his part.
Please.
I doubt it. You know what I'm saying? In fact, it becomes a way for them to use a moral mask to hide the continuing oppression they do in this country and the world.
That's right.
And what we must do is answer all this with continuous struggle. And so I appreciate the achievement, but I do not believe it's the end of the struggle for a just and good society and a good and sustainable world. And we have this contest, this conversation in Kwanzaa, because sometimes people forget that Kwanzaa is born in struggle. And if you read the language and the discussion of each principle, it starts out with striving and struggling. From the beginning, umoja, unity, to strive for and maintain unity. That means an active striving. That means a struggle to be nice, to be kind, to understand, to respect. And don't you ever doubt it's not a struggle. People pretend it's not a struggle, but it is. And people be getting mad on the way home. So we are struggling. And as Cabral said, the greatest struggle is a struggle against ourselves. And we add, what do we say? Against that in us, which is in contradiction to our values and the choice we've made for a new life and a new way of being African and human in the world. We all sit here, and we've chosen to be new Africans.
Now.
But how long does it last? At the end of the lecture, what will you choose to do? And how will you relate to each other in your daily life? It's nice to say I love humanity, because humanity is absent. It's not going to even argue with you. Let's excuse me if I'm wrong.
That's right.
It's your woman or your man, your children, your parents, your friends, your neighbors. That's how we know who you are, how you relate to them. And so Kwanzaa marks a profound reorientation.
Now,
I want to say that again. Kwanzaa marks a profound reorientation of how we understand and assert ourselves in the world. In fact, one of the main reasons I created Kwanzaa was to reaffirm our rootedness in African culture. As I've always said, we had been lifted out of our own culture and history and made a footnote and forgotten casualty in Europe's history and culture. And as Amilcar Cabral says, our liberation struggle was to return to our history and our culture, to speak our own special cultural truth, we say, in us, and to make our own unique contribution to the forward flow of human history. That's what we were supposed to do. And so Kwanzaa, well, so Kwanzaa marks, I repeat, Kwanzaa marks both a cultural and political struggle to return to our own history and culture, to reaffirm our identity and dignity as African people, and to reaffirm our social justice tradition in and through transformative struggle for serious social change. Thus, we must not forget, nor the obligation in the morality of remembrance and recommitment. There's a morality of remembrance and recommitment that is taught in Kwanzaa. It is a teaching of our foremother, Fannie Lou Hamer, who said there are two things we should all care about. Never to forget where we came from, and always praise the bridges that carried us over. And so we don't forget Malcolm, or Fannie Lou Hamer, or Messenger Muhammad, or Harriet Tubman, or Sojourner Truth, or Ella Baker, because we have a new light in the room. Just think about it.
Yes.
How people can begin to refocus,
yes,
and forget all that was done to bring us to this point. And I come to bear witness to those who walked and worked before me. And I know, as we have said so many times, that the struggle is a long and difficult one. And therefore, as Cabral says, we should mask no difficulties, what? Tell no lies, and claim no easy victory. There is no easy victory here, black people.
No.
It's good to be out in front, but there's still work to do. And so the moment of history in which we live is not only hopeful, but also demanding and dangerous, because of the life and death issues that confront and challenge us, and the awesome damage being done throughout the world. There is unfreedom in the world still. There's oppression in the world. There's injustice in the world. There's exploitation everywhere in the world. And we cannot pretend that that is over because of an election. And thus, there is an ongoing and urgent need to repair our damaged world, heal the gross and grievous injuries and human suffering, and free and empower the oppressed and disempowered peoples of the world, beginning with our own selves.
Whoa.
This is clinically clear. Did you hear what I said? Clinically clear. In any honest assessment, is evidenced by the ongoing genocide in Darfur.
Oh, yes.
It's not over because of an election. The lingering catastrophe of Katrina.
Oh, yes.
Can't forget that on our way to Washington.
Whoa.
The centuries of suffering and the current cruel occupation in Haiti. The enormous destruction of life and resource theft in the Congo. The brutal occupation of Palestine, Iraq, and Afghanistan. The social disruption and human destruction of globalization. The joblessness, poverty, ill health, hunger, homelessness in the world. The continued spread of HIV/AIDS and other devastating diseases. Sexual and labor enslavement. the continuous predation on women and children, and the progressive degradation and destruction of the environment.
Yes.
All that is not solved by an election.
No.
There is work to do, black people.
Yes,
there are struggles to engage. There's progress to be imagined and pursued. And we are the ones responsible for that. We're the moral vanguard. Have you ever wondered why Obama was supported by that 43% of white people?
Hey.
It looked like, and I'm not putting any other group down when I say this, right? But I have to say it.
Okay.
You know and I know. No 3 to 5 million people be getting ready to see another white man inaugurated, right?
No.
So that didn't work. If it worked, wouldn't be a black person then. Can we dismiss that right away?
Yes.
Are y'all there? You got to talk to him. I'm a black person. They didn't elect a white woman even.
No.
They didn't elect a Latino. That's the rising ethnic group. Rescue me if I'm wrong.
That's right.
Why do you think they chose black people? Why do you think? And they didn't just choose Obama. Obama has meaning as a black person, even though they forced him to deny sometimes that he is, or not mention it. Rescue me if I'm wrong.
Right.
Don't y'all get uncomfortable about this conversation now. I love my brother. I'm for my brother. So you know I'm for my brother. Let's all give Obama a hand so you know where I stand.
Yeah.
But we have to talk to black people. Black people existed before Obama. They exist after Obama. You know that?
Yeah.
And we'll be struggling all the way. So I ask you, what do you think? They got behind Obama. Because we have a history as a moral and social vanguard. Because, in fact, he himself built on that. When he was at Reverend Wright's church, he learned a spiritual and ethical tradition, the oldest in the world. And he learned to organize.
Yeah.
Remember when the white people were actually, and I'm giving him initiative here. I'm going back to white people in a minute. Look. Although they're always around the corner. Look, remember when he started and he kept saying, I have a community organizing background. There's a laugh at that. There's a try to diminish that. But guess what? That was a decisive thing. Because even though he used the internet and technology better than anybody before him, in the final analysis, he put millions in the street to walk the street and to talk to the people.
Right.
And guess where that comes from? Guess where that valuing, talking to the people comes from? Guess where that social justice tradition that he talks come from? It comes from black people.
That's right.
The organizing comes from our tradition in the black liberation movement. I'm going to the people, as Nkrumah said, starting with what they know, build on what they have, and giving them a sense of their own capacity to teach them that inside them is the capacity to actually create the good world they want and deserve to have. That's what Yes I Can means, but it was already taught by Ella Baker and Harriet Tubman and Malcolm X and Messenger Muhammad. I want you to see that.
Yes.
We don't walk in the room as junior brothers and sisters.
No.
We don't come to the table naked and in need, but fully clothed in our own history and culture. We have to do that. Otherwise, who are we?
Right.
Y'all understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So Obama represents black people. And if he didn't represent black people, if he represented white people in people's minds, if he represented any other people but us, he would not have had the success he had.
That's right.
And this is not to put anybody else down.
That's right.
We, because of our historical struggle, and because of how racism defines black and white, and because we have this long history of social justice and the struggle for social justice, it is exactly the moral mask that the established order needed in order to repair its damaged image in the world. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Bush had done such terrible things.
Oh,
a warmonger. A wager of unjust and unjustifiable war. A guy who only wanted to believe in racial and religious superiority and to establish that as an imperial right. He even turned against his own white brothers and sisters. Even they don't like it. Who else could give America the moral standing it needed than a son or daughter of black people? Who else? I'm telling you now, you are special people. The messenger taught that. And I told you I'm not a Muslim. I'm just giving credit where credit due.
That's right.
And it's where you can remember. It's right here so you can't deny. It is he that came and reminded us that we are possessors of dignity and divinity. And that we have to walk in dignity. That we owe it to ourselves to see ourselves as sacred and not violate the sacredness of our person and the person of our brothers and sisters. We needed that. And he told us who our oppressor was.
Hello.
We needed that.
Yes, we did.
Woo. I'm not going to get into it deep, but you know it.
Call him out.
Called him by his rightful name.
Yes. Yes.
So nobody's confused.
Right.
That's part of the black liberation struggle.
Yes, that's right.
And Obama and everybody else living and dead. After that, benefited from it.
That's right.
And I want us to know that. So I want us to keep that tradition. That's what I'm here. When I talk about Kwanzaa being a time to recommit ourselves to repairing and renewing the world, I'm building on an ancient Egyptian tradition. Because all these problems require process and practice of repairing the world, which in its exclusive sense involves not only healing and repairing the world, but healing and repairing ourselves in the process. Yes. Brother Aaron, right there, I told him, and I told the reparations people. Reparations are not about getting money, although you can have some. Here it is. It's about the struggle for justice.
That's right.
It's about repairing a grievous injury
that
has been imposed on us.
Yeah.
And as Malcolm and all the other people taught us, we can only regain our sense of our full humanity, manhood, and womanhood by struggling against those conditions and oppressors who would take those from us. It's in that struggle that we learn new truths about ourselves and about our oppressor. We learn that the man is as weak as he wants to be strong, that he can be defeated, and that right can triumph if we give it assistance. We can't just say it, truth would triumph. No, they'll kill truth. They'll twist truth.
That's right.
We have to defend truth.
That's
we have to defend right. We have to do it by doing justice and struggling to bring good in the world.
That's right.
This interrelated idea of struggling to not only repair the world but to repair ourselves in the process is rooted in the ancient ancestral sacred teaching found in the Hosea that says we are morally obligated to constantly repair, restore, and renew the world, making it more beautiful and beneficial than we inherit.
Uh-huh.
It is called Saru's Ta, and it means above all to raise up what is in ruin, to repair what is damaged, to rejoin what is divided, to replenish what is depleted or lacking, to set right what is wrong, to strengthen what is weakened, and to make flourish that which is fragile, insecure, and undeveloped. This world encompassing principle and practice provides us with an expansive concept for understanding and approaching our struggle and work in the world. And it offers us a collective vocation worthy of our history and reflective of our commitment to the well-being and wholeness of ourselves and the world. This means, black people, that we must imagine and engage the world in a decisively different way than that of the established order.
Yeah.
Obama will be the president of all the people, but he's already surrounded himself with people from the old regime.
That's right.
And he himself said, my election is not the solution, that you have to organize and make happen what you want to happen. He'll give help to the progressive man, but guess what? If no one is out there but those people that are around him now, he will do exactly what they were doing. That's just a reality, and we have to face that. I know you don't want, a lot of times, I know y'all, I don't mean y'all, but you know it's a lot of people that also want, like Frederick Douglass said, they want progress without struggle. But there's no progress without struggle, right? He said those that want progress without struggle want rain without thunder and light. They want the ocean without the roar of its mighty waters. They want crops without the necessity to plant and cultivate and harvest them. We bring into the world what we want by our own work and struggle. There is no alternative to work and struggle to raise images above the earth that reflect our capacity for human greatness and satisfy our need to be free and to flourish as human beings. We must struggle for that. There is no alternative. I know some people have gotten old since the movement. But you don't sit down until the last moment.
That's right.
You know that.
That's right.
My ideas are Anna Julia Cooper
now.
And Du Bois.
Now.
93, 100, still going to meetings.
That's right.
Don't say you're tired. Borrow from the Christians that said, I ain't no way tired. I'm telling you now. There's so much beauty in our culture. Whatever religious tradition we have, there's beauty in it because we shaped it in our own African image and interest. We speak our own special culture truth, but sometimes we don't realize it, and we let history happen behind our backs. And although we have put a president in there, we keep saying white people did it. And they are glad to say, yes, we did, with their 43%. Excuse me. You were 95%.
No.
The Latinos were 67%. I just want you to know who put him in there. And they did it after South Carolina. Look, when Obama first won in
Iowa.
See, I don't even know that state. Iowa. See, that was an open little caucus thing. That wasn't how white people really thought. You would see that at the end of the election, 43%, right?
Right.
But they gave you a hint in New Hampshire, right after Iowa.
Hey.
Clinton gave that white damsel in distress conversation. And they ran to her rescue. But they made a mistake, right? They began to trash black people.
That's right.
They began to trash Jesse. There is no Obama without Jesse, without Reverend Sharpe, without Shirley Chisholm.
Right.
Don't let white people talk about, oh, Jesse's time's over. How can truth be over? How can the struggle of justice be over? That don't even make sense.
No.
Nobody ever says the old white people are over.
Hey.
In fact, Barack got some old white people around him. In fact, he got the endorsement of an old white person. They had to help on stage.
Hello.
And nobody said he ought to stay home.
That's right.
I don't even need to call his name. Y'all remember?
Yeah.
Only with you did they talk to you about generational gaps.
Please.
They think it is normal that old white man rule. Rescue me if I'm wrong. Did I miss something? I got time. I just want you to see yourself, black people. You're beautiful people. So I say, and I repeat, we must imagine and engage the world in a decisively different way than that of the established order.
That's right.
And this requires an ethical vision that privileges and promotes struggle. Did you hear that? An ethical vision that privileges and promotes struggle, directed toward a future and flourishing worthy of our highest ideas as African people. And of course, at the heart of this practice and struggle must be the Nguzo Saba, the seven principles.
That's right.
Indeed, each principle calls for a corresponding practice.
Yes.
And we say umoja, that's not just a principle, that's also a call for practice. I say I'm committed to umoja. That means I'm committed to a practice of striving for and maintaining unity in the family, community, nation, and race. When I say tuja chakulia, self-determination, I mean I'm committed to a principle that teaches me and commits me to what define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. It's a beautiful thing. We can just go down the line, and it's always a practice, because as we say in Kawaita and us, practice proves and makes possible everything. If you want to say I love, I want you to prove it in practice.
Hello.
If you say I'm strong, I want you to prove it in practice.
Yeah.
If you say you're a scholar or intelligent, if you're a thinker for yourself, then I want you to prove it in practice. If you're a good husband and wife, a good friend, a good brother, a good sister, I want you to do what? Prove it in practice. That's all I want. It's not too much to ask, is it?
No.
So what does this teach us? Umoja calls on us to practice a principle togetherness in our relationships. A principle togetherness. Did you hear that? You can't just unite with anybody. You know, that people be wrongdoing. You understand? You can't do that. You can't start a business with thieves. You know what I mean? And you can't build a family with the unfaithful. So you got to discipline yourself, and you got to discipline others. Do you understand what I'm saying? Practice proves and makes possible everything. And so umoja unity calls on us to practice a principle togetherness in our relationship, rooted in mutual respect, justice, and shared good in the world. Tuja chakulia, self-determination, teaches us to define ourselves by the good we do and the way we assert ourselves in the world, in life-enhancing, world-preserving, and the upward ways of our ancestors. Ujima, collective working responsibility, reminds us that we must together build the good world we want and deserve to live in, and leave a legacy worthy of our history and consciously concerned with our future and the future of the world. Ujamaa,
cooperative economics.
Urges us to share the working wealth of the world in just and equitable ways, and to seek the good life of dignity, decency, and prosperity for everyone. What we want for ourselves, we must want for others. And we begin with our own people and spread outward. Do you understand that?
Yes.
I want the world, my tradition teaches me, our tradition teaches me, that the wealth of the world belongs to all the people of the world.
Yes.
That justice must be for everyone, or it's not justice at all.
That's right.
And that all the great good is shared good. Freedom, a shared good. Justice, a shared good. Sisterhood, brotherhood, family, a shared good. Friendship, a shared good. And if somebody's doing more of it or getting more of it than the other, it ain't real. Rescue me if I'm wrong. Ain't no one-sided love. You know that. Let's talk a little bit about male-female relationships.
No.
Ain't no one-sided love.
No.
What you got, one person not loving, and the other one suffering from bondage of the heart.
Ooh.
Emotional enslavement. He didn't do me wrong, but I love him. No, you just enslaved. Let's face it. You lost your self-concept. You're looking for yourself on the floor. and you're waiting to be approved by your oppressor. And you've seen that with a people, but you can also have it with a person. You ever seen people wanting the oppressor to approve them?
Yeah.
Well, you can do it as a people, you can do it as a person. And so what we ask is for a good life of dignity, decency, and prosperity for everyone. Nia, purpose.
Nia, purpose.
It calls on us to pursue the collective vocation of bringing, increasing, and sustaining good in the world in emulation and evocation of our traditional greatness. Kumba.
Kumba.
Creativity.
Creativity.
It requires that we constantly strive to make and leave our community and the world more beautiful and beneficial than we inherit. And Imani.
Imani.
Faith.
Faith.
Teaches us to believe in the good, to hope for the best, and work and struggle relentlessly to make both a reality. I'm going to say that again. Imani. Listen to this. Imani faith. It teaches us to believe in the best. Pardon me. To believe in the good. Again. It teaches us to believe in the good, to hope for the best, and to work and struggle relentlessly to make both a reality. I want us to be positive. This is Kuji Chagalia, and I want to just take that principle and go back to it and explain it in detail of what we ought to be.
All right.
Because it involves rooting yourself in African culture. And if you don't do that, all I've said to you won't really matter in the end. That's what's distinct about Kawita, us, and myself. Anything I tell you, I can show you an African reference for it. I can show you a text. Do you understand that?
Right.
That's why we say one of the most important things you can do, black people, is to dialogue with your own culture. And the culture may be, the text may be written, oral, or living practice. But you must read your text. Read the life of Harriet Tubman, even if she don't write nothing. Read the oral account of how she came to the crossroads of life and freedom. You read that and get inspiration about why she didn't just run away, but turned around and redefined freedom from individual escape to the collective practice of self-determination in community. And you read the ancient text, the Odu Ifa, that tells you that surely, he said, let's do things with joy, for surely humans have been chosen to bring good in the world. And they are divinely chosen, chosen by the Creator, so that nobody is superior to the other. All humans are chosen, not just one group. What's wrong with that? I'm left out. Somebody else is chosen. Here I am looking for approval from my oppressor. We can't do that. That's why we oppose what the white man said about Jeremiah Wright. He can't approve our preachers.
No.
He can't choose our churches.
No. No.
He can't determine the content of our sermon. We'll preach and teach what we want. What kind of man or woman would let an oppressor be their teacher? An oppressor cannot be our teacher. So it seems to me we have to root ourselves in the best ideas and practices of our people, from ancient Africa to modern Afro-America, from continental Africa to diasporan Africans all over the world. Do you understand that? Bring me a lesson of good. Every time I go on the radio, I tell black people, don't be telling me nothing negative about black people. I already heard it from the white man. By the way, he might have gave it to you. Think of something good that your mama did if you can't think of nobody else. That your grandmother, that your father or your grandfather or your friend or your loved one, someone, somebody did something good. Raise up the good. Teach it as a model so that your children can benefit from it. And so you can be inspired.
Yeah.
Yes.
When do we look depressed so many times? Everybody's telling you what we ain't done.
Oh, yeah.
People get up in the audience and tell me how I can reach black people. No, how can you reach yourself? How can we make you do what you know needs to be done?
Hello.
Sekou Touré, I like taking Sekou Touré. Sekou Touré says, if everybody agrees on the revolution and the principles of the revolution, why do you think the revolution suffers? He said, because we talk revolutionary and we move by old habits and ideas. You know that, don't you? Everybody talks black and big, don't they? Oh, yeah, I'm the only one. No, you're not the only one. Ain't nobody doing only one something. You know what I mean? Let's be honest. Everybody's doing something good. Raise your hand if you're not, then we'll pray for you. So don't get up and say, ain't nobody doing nothing but you. And if they're not doing anything but you, why have you talked to them before you got here? Because sometimes we like to be the only one in our class. Even though we not. Give other people credit. I'm forever grateful to black people. And I said it today on the radio and last, all of Kwanzaa season, every season, I say this. Yes, I created Kwanzaa, but it would have remained an intellectual idea, particular to me, if first our organization, us advocates, had not embraced it, said it was good, and began to promote it. If the nationalists, larger nationalist community, hadn't embraced it and began to promote it. And if in the final analysis, the people themselves had not embraced it as a basis for value orientation, culture, and philosophical grounding, and as a basis for doing their programmatic development for the work they did and do in and for the community. It is black people that took it all over the world.
Yes.
All over the world. 40 million people. Just think of the power of that. That today, all over the world, 40 million Africans are talking about Kwanzaa and Guzo Saba and particularly self-determination. And they're talking about how it means to define ourselves, to name ourselves, to create for ourselves, and to speak for ourselves. And let me close by saying this. To define ourselves, we mean define ourselves by the good we do and the dignity-bearing way we walk in the world. And the Hoosier, Reddy Kanoon, says, I know myself as a precious staff of the divine. I'm noble, godly to behold, excellent in the work I do in the world. What a beautiful way to define oneself. We define ourselves, I repeat, by what we do. Indeed, the Hoosier also says, the wise are known by their wisdom, but the great are known by their good deeds. And that is what Martin Luther King means when he says, everybody can be great because everybody can serve. And you must serve each other. And you must not feel it wrong when you serve each other. The Hoosier says, serve God that he may protect and promote you. Serve your brothers and sisters that you may enjoy a good reputation and be respected for it. Serve a wise person so you can learn wisdom. Serve one who serves you. Serve anyone so you can benefit from it. And serve your mother and father so you can go forward and prosper. Service. Service, black people. There is a saying we have. I'm a saver mat, which means a moral teacher in the ancient Egyptian Kawidamat tradition. Okay? And there are five commitments we make. The first is to be a good person in the world. The second is to be a consistent servant of the people. Third, to be a constant soldier in the struggle. Fourth, to be a continuous student of the teachers. And five, to be a tireless teacher of the good, the right, and the possible. If we could just make and keep that commitment, the whole world would change. So let us define ourselves by the good we do in the world. What does it mean to name ourselves? To name ourselves in self-determination. Is to name ourselves in reverent respect for our history and highest value. In the 60s, we returned to our name. We retrieved our name. As Malcolm had told us, have you ever heard of a Chinese named Whitley or a Japanese named Jones? You know something wrong.
Right.
And Carlos Moore told us. Carlos Moore told us. Pets and other animals are named by their owners. But free men and women name themselves. And so we went back to black. We did Sankofa before we knew the word. We reached back and retrieved our name. And we called ourselves in dignity-affirming way. Noble one, learned one, kind and caring, generous, just, skilled, patient, powerful, gift of God, master teacher, keeper of the tradition, soldier, warrior, trustworthy and true. Those are the names. No dog or Mr. Doolittle involved. Just the good. Self-determination to create ourselves, to create for ourselves, is to build up, not destroy. To bring into being good in the world. To do this in the life-affirming, world-preserving ways of our ancestors. And finally, to speak for ourselves is to do so in ways that bring forth the best of our culture. To speak truth. And to demand justice, and to share with our people in the world the best of what it means to be African and human in the fullest sense. And to see African as a unique and equally valuable way of being human in the world. To engage it as a sacred identity. You see, there is no history more holy than ours. No people more sacred. You must remember that. So you don't walk in the shadow of your oppressor and hope one day he'll recognize you as an equal. In the beginning you were. Others came afterwards. And you have to understand that we're the ones who taught the world first as early as 2140 BCE, that humans are in the image of God, that they are come from his very person, and that there are certain things we can't do to ourselves or let others do to us for fear of violating that sacred sense. And Jedi, in the Middle Kingdom, the Pharaoh Khufu, he could neither kill nor experiment, even on a nameless prisoner, because even that nameless prisoner, dishonored, marginalized, is still equal to the Pharaoh as a noble image of God, worthy of the highest respect. That's what the Hosea says. And we have to read it as the Hosea says, behold, follow in the footsteps of the ancestors. Behold their words and do in books. Open them and read their wise counsel. You have to do that, black people. And that means dialoguing with African culture, asking it questions and seeking from it answers to the fundamental issues of humankind. How do we create a just and good society? How do we build strong male-female relationships? How do we raise our children? How do we treat the stranger? How do we establish a right relationship with the environment? How do we engage in the awesome work of peace in the world? Usually we ask other cultures and literatures that question, and we take their answers. But who asks Africa? I ask Africa. Our organization, us, asks Africa. And the best of you thinking here, you also ask Africa. And we need to get together, those of us who think like this, so we can create a critical mass of people that are constantly dialoguing with African culture and reading the text and analyzing them and extracting the best of what it means to be African and human, so we can speak that special truth to the world and use it as a fundamental contribution to the forward flow of human history. This indeed is my closing paragraph. I know that we have great hope. We wouldn't be black if we didn't hope. But I said this. Believe in the good. Hope for the best. But also work and struggle to make both a reality. So in this era of great expectation and hope, our task is as it has always been, black people, this Kwanzaa, all year round and before and after. It is to know our past and honor it. To engage our present and improve it. And to imagine our future and forge it in the most effective, expansive, and ethically grounded ways. This means boldly and continuously facing the difficulties and dangers that confront us. It means we must seek and speak truth. We must seek and speak truth. We can't just speak truth. We have to seek truth, because the truth we are speaking might not be the one that's actually true. You know that, don't you? Things were as it seemed. There'd be no need for scientific research, right?
Right.
So we must seek and speak truth. Do and demand justice. Treat each other with ultimate respect and loving kindness. Walk and work together righteously. Resist wrong, oppression, and injustice everywhere. And struggle, did you hear what I said? And struggle constantly and continuously to bring, sustain, and increase good in the world. Head is our Kwanzaa. Happy Kwanzaa to all of you. We wish for you blessings without number and all good things without end. Hotel.
Hotel.
Black power, black power, black power. That was Dr. Malana Karanga, the man who is credited for founding of Kwanzaa. And as we know, although it is a celebration that we do December the 26th up until January the 1st, the principles of Kwanzaa come from the African culture or principles of the Nguzu Saba. And these traditions are indeed ancient, and these ancient traditions are what we need in today's time. Now what we will do, we will hear a clip from Brother Michael Imhotep, who is going to speak on Kwanzaa to Wakanda, reconnecting our people to African culture for self-empowerment. So we're going to play this clip, Black Power.
All right, again, I'm Ayumi Shambomani, regional director for Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. I've been in this movement for long haul. I've been in this 30 years, and I intend to continue on until we are free. Well, I can't stand anymore or whatever I need to do. But the fight, the struggle continues, as they say. You know, as many people who have gone on, passed on, and they died in this movement, and I intend to continue and die in this movement if I need to. I'm in it for the long haul. I'm not giving up. Not giving up any of these things that are going on here in the city of Detroit, because some people are trying to take all of this away from us. You know, we have to fight to keep what we have here in Detroit. I make no bones about it. I don't like the administration. I don't like the things that are going on in this city. You know, and we need to make sure that we fight against not only the gentrifiers, the millionaires and billionaires, but the sellouts and samples who just giving our stuff away. You know, I don't pull no punches about that. Let's be serious about our business.
Okay.
So without further ado, I met this brother a few years ago. He's done quite a few of our Kwanzaa programs. He's an historian. He's the founder of the African History Network. He's host of the African History Network show on 910 Superstation, WFDF Detroit, which can be heard 6 nights per week, Monday through Friday, 11 p.m., midnight to Sunday, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. His show focuses on education, empowering and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world. He is the founder and host of the nationally syndicated radio show, the Michael Imhotep Show, on the Empowerment Radio Network. He is a talk show host, researcher, lecturer, writer, and historian. He has guest hosted radio, national radio shows, including the Warren Valentine Show and the Roland Martin Show. He's currently a weekly panelist on the Daily Digital Show, Roland Martin, Unfiltered, every Friday. His motto is, Right knowledge corrects wrong behavior. He is a jewel here in Detroit. I'm glad he's here in Detroit, because he gives out so much historical information, talks about the greatness of African people. Hopefully y'all know what the greatness of African people. We were here first. We were here first.
Yes.
You know, and we are going to continue to be here. He said, we don't die, we just multiply. All right, without further ado, Michael M. Hotep, let's give him a hand.
This presentation is an updated, slightly updated version of one I did back in 2018, right here. It's actually December 27, 2018, for Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. So I want to thank Brother Bomani, Brother Kimba, Shoshana. I want to thank you all for having me speak here. And for some reason, they're the only people that asked me to speak during Kwanzaa. I don't understand that. So this presentation is called From Kwanzaa to Wakanda. Reconnecting African Americans to African culture and history for self-empowerment, okay? And here's my information here, is my email address, info@africanhistorynetwork.com. You can email me there. I'll respond to you if you want me to speak for your group or organization. Mm-hmm. And at the African History Network, we focus on educating, empowering, and inspiring people of African descent throughout the diaspora and around the world, because right now it's correct wrong behavior. Okay, so I'm on 9:10 a.m. Superstation WFPL. And if you visit my website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com, we have information about that. I know the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, are they still recruiting?
Absolutely.
They're still recruiting, so they want you. Okay, you can't see it here because it's displayed here. They said, we want you, okay? That's Malcolm X, our brother Malcolm. Now, anytime I speak, I know I may say some things that are outside of this conference that some people are aware of. Now, just because you've never heard it before, disagree with it, or don't like it, does not mean it's not true. It just means you have to do some research to understand what I'm talking about, okay? So usually when I speak, I usually have people put their fingers together to form a circle. I usually say something like this. The space inside the circle represents my realm of knowledge. Everything that I think I know about whatever I think I know is represented within the circumference of this circle. I must keep in mind that there are still things to know that exist outside the circumference of my own awareness. So just because you know everything that you know about what you know does not mean you know everything that is to know about what you know. There's still things that exist outside the circumference of your own awareness. Now, Malcolm taught us a number of things. Malcolm's one of my heroes. Malcolm, Dr. King, Marcus Garvey, Rosa Parks, Stanley Lou Hamer, Queen Nzinga. But Malcolm taught us a number of things. And one of the things that Malcolm taught us was the power of the media. In my degrees in business administration, with a major in marketing from Wayne State University, graduated from Cass Technical High School as well. But Malcolm said the media is the most powerful entity on earth. They have the power to make the innocent guilty and to make the guilty innocent, and that's power because they control the mind of the masses. Because they control the minds of the masses. Now, I'm going to show this brief clip of Malcolm X, and I like to show this at presentations like this because it's about 59 seconds, well, it's about 2 minute clip. But Malcolm asks the question of who are you? And what Kwanzaa does is reconnects us to our African history and African culture. Because in this presentation, what I do is show you some of the African roots of Kwanzaa, okay? And a lot of people don't understand this history. Okay, now this is Malcolm, let's see, just press play back here.
Nope.
Press play. It should play. Okay. All right, if it's not playing, Malcolm asked the question, who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? Where were you and what did you have? What language did you speak? Okay, so what was your name? It couldn't have been Smith or Jones or Bunch or Powell. That wasn't your name. They didn't have those type of names where you and I came from. What was your name? And what happened to you? Why don't you know now what your name was then? What happened to your history? What happened to your culture? What happened to your land? What happened to your history? What method did the man use to make you as dumb as you are right now? So this is what Malcolm was saying. Then the next clip is Malcolm, March 29, 1964, delivering the Ballad of the Bullet, where he uses the term African Americans. Because for some reason people think Jesse Jackson created the term African Americans. No, Malcolm used it. You read Malcolm's speeches. He used the term. We used the term in 1960. One of my teachers, Professor James Small, told me personally, we were using the term African Americans in the 1960s. The earliest recorded usage of the term African American dates back to about May 1782 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The New York Times has two articles dealing with this. All right, now, Kwanzaa answers the question of who are you, the question that Malcolm with that. Who are you? Who are we by, it answers the question of who are we by reconnecting many African Americans to our history and culture. And people's history and culture teaches them how to deal with the problems of the past and the present and the future to meet the needs of the community. So when we study this information, we don't study this information to speak negatively about other people that don't know it. We don't study this information to win some black version of Jeopardy or something like that and see who can memorize the most facts and figures. The information that we take in should bring about behavior modification. This is why our model is right now to correct wrong behavior. Okay? It should bring about behavior modification. And then when we saw, how many people saw the film Black Panther? The original, this is very good. How many people saw the film Black Panther? Okay. So we know Black Panther 2 is coming out November of 2022. And I've done three lectures dealing with the film Black Panther to show how it connects to African history and culture. And at the beginning of the movie, you have the scene where they're fighting at what's called Warrior Falls, where waterfalls, where they have a fight to see who's going to sit on the throne of Wakanda. It's called Warrior Falls. It's straight out of the comic book. And there's a scene where T'Challa's losing, and we know we lost Chadwick Boseman. This tragic passed away from, I think it was colon cancer. But there was a scene where he's losing to M'Baku of the Jabari tribe, and his stepmother, played by Angela Bassett, Ramonda, she yells out, show them who you are. Show them who you are. Okay, well, before you can show them who you are, you have to know who you are. This is where our history and culture comes into play. Now, how many people are familiar with Dr. David Imhotep, who wrote the book, The First Americans Were African, Documented Death? All right. Yeah. You're not familiar with Dr. David Imhotep? Oh my God, you can Google his name. If you Google his name, mine will come up also because I've interviewed him probably about 13 times. His first book came out in 2011 on this subject matter, and it deals with the African presence in the Americas dating back at least 56,000 years ago. 56,000 years ago in South America, at least 51,700 years ago in the land we call the United States of America. Now this is before Native Americans came into existence, okay? And when you see some of my information, you look at the interviews I've done with them, we go deep into this history. But this is why, even though the transatlantic slave trade happened, this is why, you know, some of the academics I have to correct it, because we have to understand the last 50,000 years of history, not just the last 500 years of history. Okay? So yes, the transatlantic slave trade happened, but we have to deal with the history of thousands of years before that. Now, on page 14 of his book, he deals with the discovery that was made in Allendale County, South Carolina in 2004. I teach online classes dealing with history and things like this. And some of these archaeological discoveries that are coming out every other week, I deal with in class, okay? And I say the deeper they dig, the blacker the planet gets, the more research they do, the older we get. Because when these archaeological discoveries come out, they keep having to push the timelines back. They keep realizing all this stuff is much older than they originally told us. But on page 14 of his book, he deals with this archaeological discovery made by Dr. Albert Goodyear, who's an archaeologist from the University of South Carolina. Dr. Albert Goodyear is derided by the authorities in European archaeology and things like this because his discovery is flipping everything upside down. What he found was 13 different types of evidence fairly documenting an African presence in this country dating back at least 51,700 years. And these were the Khoisan, who have the oldest DNA on the planet, that are ancestors to Dainu and Atua. They go all around the world. They're in southern Africa. They're still alive today. And they were here in this land also. But they found artifacts, architecture, campsites, carvings, Egyptian writings, footprints and lava, genetic M174D haploid groups dealing with DNA and genetics, linguistics, paintings, skulls, skeletons, structures, and tools. Now, I last interviewed Dr. David Imhotep October 12th, 2021. October 12th, we know, is the anniversary of Columbus landing in what he called the Bahamas. And when we look at where Columbus went on his four voyages, number one, we all know Columbus never came to the land we call the United States of America. Okay, right? We all know that, right? We all know that. That ain't everybody saying. Don't take my word for it. Proper documentation is all conversation. I can show you what white historians can show you. Go to history.com, okay? And look up Christopher Columbus. It shows you where he went on his four voyages. The closest he came to this land we call the United States of America was Cuba, which is 90 miles away. But he goes into Cuba, Hispaniola, the western third of the island of Hispaniola is where Haiti is. He goes into Puerto Rico, Honduras, Panama. But a lot of the countries that that he conquered on behalf of the Spanish crown are still in turmoil today. And we've heard Puerto Rico in the news, we definitely heard Haiti in the news, things like this. They're still in Cuba. They're still reeling from being conquered over 500 years ago by Columbus and the Spanish crown. Now, this article right here, this is just a brief summary of it. Read this article, okay? As one of my teachers, Professor Kabahayawaka Kamane, said, you don't have to believe a word that I say. Go do your own research, okay? Proper documentation ends all conversation. Read this article. New evidence puts man in North America 50,000 years ago. This article is from November 18, 2004. It's from ScienceDaily.com. ScienceDaily.com is a scientific website. They have all types of scientific discoveries, archaeological discoveries there, things like this. The article is still there because I show this in my classes when I teach. They're talking about Dr. Albert Goodyear's discovery. This is Dr. Albert Goodyear. He's an archaeologist from the University of South Carolina. The summary says, radiocarbon tests of carbonized plant remains were artifacts were unearthed last May along the Savannah River in Allendale County by University of South Carolina archaeologist Dr. Albert Goodyear indicate that the sediments contained in these artifacts are at least 50,000 years old, meaning that humans inhabited North America long before the Last Ice Age. So his discovery just totally flipped everything upside down. And what we have to understand is that, you know, a lot of people talk about the 1619 Project. Okay, well, there's some good there. There's some historical inaccuracies there. There's some good there. But the Spanish were taking Africans into the territory we call South Carolina and Georgia in 1526. That's 93 years before 1619, last time I checked. People don't even talk about that. Juan Garrido, the Spanish conquistador, who was born in West Africa in 1480, came into Florida with Juan Ponce de Leon, the Spanish conquistador, in 1513. That's before 1619. And this is where you get the name Florida. That came from that's in reference to flowers in Spanish coming from Juan Ponce de Leon. So this was our land stolen from us. When we actually study this history, we didn't have a seismic shift in the conscious level of African people in this country. 50 million African people, when we realized that this was our land stolen from us. Okay. Some people sound scared of that. Y'all okay?
Yeah.
All this stuff is fairly documented. This ain't just me saying it. All this stuff is fairly documented. See, now, yes, slavery existed, but see, I got into this conversation, somebody called into my show and said he's a descendant of slaves. I said, weren't the slaves free? December 6, 1865, when Georgia ratified the 13th Amendment, child slavery ended, were the slaves free? When you go study Reconstruction, 1865, 1877, I teach all this, when you go study Reconstruction, they had organizations, they had like the Freedmen's Bank. It wasn't called the Slave Bank. It was the Freedmen's Bank. They had the Freedmen's Bureau. It wasn't called the Slave Bureau. They were calling themselves former slaves, ex-slaves, freedmen, black freedmen, Indian treaties of 1866. I said, why do some of us, now they don't do it intentionally, but why do some of us try to put our ancestors back into a condition that one they were freed from, two, many of them took up arms to free themselves from? Because when you go study the Civil War, there's about 200,000 African Americans who served in the Civil War, took up arms to fight against their former slave masters. So why do some of us try to put them back into a condition that they, one, were freed from, and two, took up arms to free themselves from? I'm still trying to figure that one out, but okay. All right. Because a few years ago, some of them were calling themselves descendants of kings and queens. So I'm still trying to figure this out. So I don't know everything, so maybe somebody can school me on that. All right. Kujichagulee, self-determination. To define ourselves, name ourselves, create for ourselves, and speak for ourselves. Power, as Dr. Wade Nobles, who spoke here back in 2017, Dr. Wade Nobles, Professor James Small, and Dr. Linda Jefferson, they were here all on the same day speaking. Were y'all here for that?
Yeah.
Okay, some of y'all were here. Okay, I know they were here. Okay. Power is the ability to define and shape reality and have other people accept your definition of reality as if it were their own. Coming from the Latin word potere, meaning to be able. This is something one of our great scholars, Dr. Wade Nobles, teaches us. All right, let's see here. Let me go to the next one. Okay, here we go. All right, now, when was Kwanzaa created? Kwanzaa was created in 1966 by Dr. Mawulana Karanga and the organization US. It was members of the organization US, along with Dr. Mawulana Karanga, that created Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa reached out, and this was in the midst of the Black Freedom Movement. It reflects a concern for cultural groundedness in thought and practice. Kwanzaa was created to serve multiple purposes and to address specific problems that African people were dealing with in America in 1966, but still dealing with this problem today in 2021, about to be 2022. And I talked to one of my teachers, Dr. Linda Jeffries, about this. We were just here. We had Dr. J here in September for the screening of the documentary Hot P, The Role of Economics in the Development of Civilization. How many people were here for that? Nobody? Okay. All right. You missed Dr. J threw down. But I talked to him about this because he knows all these people. And I said, Doctor, I said, in my research, it looks like members of the organization, along with Dr. Karinger, created Kwanzaa, founded Kwanzaa. He said, yes, you're correct. So I said, okay, that's good enough for me. Now, Kwanzaa, what is Kwanzaa? Because some people think Kwanzaa is a black Christmas, or you celebrate Kwanzaa, you can't celebrate Christmas or something like that. If you celebrate Kwanzaa, you don't believe in God or what have you. Kwanzaa is an African-American and Pan-African holiday which celebrates family, community, and culture. That's at the heart of Kwanzaa, FCC, family, community, and culture. It's celebrated December 26th through January the 1st, okay? So if you want to celebrate Christmas December 25th, you can still celebrate Kwanzaa. You don't have to feel torn between the two, okay? Now, and one of the things is, how many people listen to the African History Network show on National Interest Station? You should listen, because I'll be on live tonight at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I did a show on December 21st for the Winter Solstice, and we dealt with some of the origins of Christmas, things like this. But it's important to understand that a lot of people say, well, Kwanzaa is a made-up holiday, you know? But all these holidays are made-up holidays. You have to study the history of them. The problem is, we've been taught to celebrate things we don't understand the history of. All right, now, the name Kwanzaa comes from the Kiswahili phrase, Matunda ya Kwanzaa. Now, some people say Swahili, it's actually Kiswahili. Matunda ya Kwanzaa, which means first fruits. Kiswahili is the most widely spoken African language. You can visit the website, officialkwanzaawebsite.com, for more information about Kwanzaa also. Now, what is Pan-Africanism? You say Pan-Africanism, some people get scared, think they have to stop eating pork or something like that. You know, when you say Pan-Africanism, right? It's a good idea to stop eating pork, but you can be a Pan-Africanist and eat pork if you want to. All right? Now, Pan-Africanism is an ideology that African people around the world and throughout the diaspora should be united. It deals with the social, cultural, political, economic, material, and spiritual aspects. It doesn't matter who your colonizer was or who your colonizer is, okay? Because the African people basically, with the exception of Ethiopia and Liberia, we've all been colonized, all right? Because some people get into debate and think they're colonized because they speak French or the other one speaks English or something like that. One colonizer is better than another. They're all colonizers. This is what we have to understand, all right? Now, Pan-Africanism teaches that the fate of African people worldwide is intertwined, and we share not only a common history, but a common destiny. For more information on Pan-Africanism, one good source, and it's a good basic source, Pan-Africanism for Beginners by Sid LaMail, pages 11 through 13. Then other sources, of course. But this is one I read back in college, like graduated in 94 or so. Long time ago, but I still have the book. Alright, now what are first fruit celebrations? Okay, because this ties into the African origins of Kwanzaa. A lot of people think that, Kwanzaa is just some just totally new, made up stuff and just new traditions, etc. But no, it's rooted in first fruit harvest celebrations practiced in Africa. Now, first fruit celebrations have taken place in African history going back to ancient Kemet. Can you say Kemet?
Yeah.
Kemet's one of the original names of Egypt. And Egypt is not what we call it. Tanahesi or Tatseti, or what the Greeks called Nubia, all right? Now, first fruit celebrations occur in ancient and modern African civilizations, such as among the Ashanti of Ghana. Can you say Ashanti? The Yoruba of Nigeria. Can you say Yoruba? All right, now we can also find first fruit celebrations in large African empires, like amongst the Zulu or AmaZulu of South Africa, and smaller societies in southeastern Africa, like the Matabele, the Thonga, and the Vedu. Kwanzaa builds on five fundamental activities of continental African first fruit celebration. So this is borrowed from these different practices from different first fruit harvest celebrations in different African cultures. Kwanzaa builds on five fundamental activities of continental African first fruit celebration: ingathering, reverence, commemoration, recommitment, and celebration. For more information, how many people know that Dr. Maulana Karenga wrote a book on Kwanzaa? Okay, so I read the book. I do research. I read the book. All right, pages, this is page 16 through 17. The African-American Holiday of Kwanzaa, a celebration of family, community, and culture. Because it goes deep into it. I also wrote an article a few years ago dealing with Kwanzaa and the origins and things like this. Okay? Now, when we look here briefly here at some of the African roots of Kwanzaa, in ancient Kenya, the festival is called Per In Men, okay, in the Medinet, okay, what the Greeks called the hieroglyphics, or the coming forth of men, which was seen as a reaffirmation of the harmonious interlocking of the divine, natural, and human, or social, among the Zulu or Amazu. And in the film Black Panther, we see 11 different African cultures represented. We see the Amazulu, we see cultures from Namibia, Nigeria, all that, the Mercy from Ethiopia, all that's represented in the film Black Panther. Now, among the Zulu or Amazulu, it was called Umkhosi. Among the Swazi, it was called Ingwala. Among the Matabele, Inswala. Among the Ashanti, it had various names as well. Among the Yoruba, various names depending on the region. Okay, now the Ashanti or Yoruba festivals are usually referred to as the New Yam Festival, YAM, the New Yam Festival, which is the time of harvesting the first yams. Even though these festivals have various names and are from different African societies or nations, they all focus around the harvesting of the first fruits and have similar values and practices. Okay, and this is Dr. Green's book as well. You can check that out also. So what we see here is, because once again, I speak all across the country, and I have people say that Kwanzaa is made up holiday, things like this. They don't cite the African cultural first fruit celebrations that Kwanzaa is based upon and the culture that it comes from. Okay, Kwanzaa helps to reconnect African people to who we are, just as the 14 pieces of Asar were dismembered and offset, collected the 13 pieces, and he was resurrected, okay? This history and culture helps us to remember, helps us to put those pieces back together and come alive again. All right, now, as I said before, you know, a lot of people, and this is not defending anybody, but a lot of people say, oh, Kwanzaa made up holidays. If you ask for the history of all the holidays are made up holidays, okay? Everything from Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving, St. Patrick's Day, Cinco de Mayo. Cinco de Mayo is celebrated more in the U.S. than it is in Mexico. Cinco de Mayo is not Mexico's Independence Day. That's celebrated a minor battle in 1862 where 2,000 Mexicans held off 6,000 French, okay, in the war that was going on. The 4th of July as well, that's made up too, okay? I'm not saying things didn't happen. I'm saying there was a time when they didn't celebrate. It's something made up, okay? Dr. Ishaku Musa Barashango, who wrote the book African People and European Holidays and Missile Genocide, called it the 4th of July, all right? Valentine's Day, all these are made up holidays, okay? You can celebrate them if you want to, but I think it's important, especially for African people, to understand the history of what it is we've been taught to celebrate. Because a lot of times we participate in things and don't know what we're doing, okay? And then we ask people, why do you do this? Why do you do the world? My parents taught me, or my teachers taught me, or something like that, okay? How many people read African People and European Holidays and Mental Genocide? This is book one. He has a book two by Dr. Ishaku Musa Barashango. How many people read it? Not one person cited it? Okay, so take a picture of this. Go research this, all right? And then I have lectures dealing with the holidays. I have a three-hour lecture dealing with the origins of Christmas, the pre-Christian origins, the winter solstice, and how all the time back in ancient Kemet, ancient Egypt, things like this as well. This is Bantu Stephen Biko, one of our great South African freedom fighters who died in 1977 from injuries suffered from South African police. He was betrayed by Denzel Washington in the 1987 movie Cry Freedom. He said, the most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressed is the mind of the oppressed. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressed is the mind of the oppressed. We have to take our mind back. We know that yesterday, we know we lost Bishop Desmond Tutu as well. Very quickly here, if you look at the... Okay, very quickly here, to connect this to the film Black Panther, I'm going to skip through some of this, right? And so the character of Black Panther, T'Challa, was introduced July 1966. in Fantastic Four, issue number 52. Okay? It wasn't because of the Black Panther Party or something like this. They weren't found until October 1966. But in the issue, he said that at the end, it was a two-part, it was a two-part issue. He said that I have, as you see, hereditary chieftain of the Wakandans and perhaps the richest man in all the world. But so when the movie came out, now this is Mansa Musa, Emperor of the Mali Empire, who became emperor in 1312 AD. There was an article from History.com, the official website of the History Channel, when the movie Black Panther came out. And it talked about the richest man in the world. And it talked about Mansa Musa, but it connected it to T'Challa and Black Panther. Okay? And it said, this is an excerpt from the article, it says, in the vast fictional universe of Marvel Comics, T'Challa, better known as Black Panther, is not only king of Wakanda, and Wakanda is a real world, a real world, okay? Wakanda is a Bantu word, but Wakanda is also Native American languages, Omaha, Ponca, and Sioux Indian languages, it means possessive secret powers. And in Wisconsin, there's a Wakanda water park as well, okay? Because I did a lot of research to prepare for the lectures I was doing on the film Black Panther. Now, T'Challa is also the richest superhero of them all. And although today's fight for the title wealthiest person alive involves a tug of war between billionaire CEOs, the wealthiest person in history, Mansa Musa, has more in common with Marvel's first black superhero. Okay, now, Mansa Musa became ruler of the Mali Empire in 1312 AD, or Common Era, taking the throne after his predecessor, Abubakar II, for whom he had served as deputy, went missing on a voyage he took by sea to find the edge of the Atlantic Ocean. Mansa Musa's rule came at a time when European nations were struggling due to raging civil wars and a lack of resources, okay? Because this is right before the bubonic plague, the Black Death hits in 1347 and hits dispersed from 1347 to 1400, and Europe loses between one quarter to one third of their population. Now, during that period, the Mali Empire flourished thanks to ample natural resources like gold and salt. Read this entire article here. This 14th century African emperor remains the richest person in the world. This is from March 19, 2018. This is from History.com. This is what white people are telling you. Okay? All right. So, and then this is some information here on Wakanda as well. Wakanda is a real world. It also means possessive secret powers. I'm going to wrap it up with this here. Visit our website, AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. I teach online classes Saturdays and Sundays. On Sundays, it's a 10-week online course, Ancient Kemet, the Moor, then the Ma'afa, understanding the transatlantic slave trade, what they did teach with school. We deal with thousands of years of history, what leads us to the transatlantic slave trade taking place. We do the classes live. All the sessions are archived. They're recorded. You can go back and watch it anytime. So as soon as you register, you can watch the class we did last week. And you still have access to the full class even after the course is over. So in September 2022, if you want to go back and watch the full class, you can. Then the other class I teach on Saturday, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a 10-week online course from the Civil War to the Civil Rights Movement and Black Power, 1865 to 1968. And we look at first what leads up to the Civil War taking place, starting in 1803 with the Louisiana Purchase, and then we go through and look at that history through 1968. So each class we go through and analyze approximately a 10, 15, maybe 20-year period of time. It's a visual presentation as well. So visit AfricanHistoryNetwork.com. And you can email me through the website or email me at ahnshow@africanhistorynetwork.com. So I'm going to wrap it up there and say, Wakanda forever. Thanks for your support. Abar Ghani, Santi Sana, Mark Hotel. Peace. All right. And I'll be available here Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday also. I'll put it.
All right. Thank you,
brother. All right. Let's give him a big hand. That is your brother here in Detroit.
Kwanzaa is coming, and the KwanzaaShop.com has all of your Kwanzaa needs. Order your Kwanzaa set today, which includes a kanara, candles, a mat, a cup, the African American flag, and a basket. Visit the KwanzaaShop.com.
Black power, my bad, I cut it off. That's the KwanzaaShop.com. If you don't already have your Kwanzaa, you will have it on time for next year. You just heard from Brother Michael M. Hotep. He was expressing the fact that Kwanzaa is indeed a Pan-African celebration. Some people have are just getting into Kwanzaa. Some people are having questions about what Kwanzaa is about. Some people even have questions about the founder of Kwanzaa. I mean, these are valid questions, but a lot of this information can be found out by simply doing your research. We in the New Black Panther Party acknowledge Kwanzaa as a cultural event. We understand that it is based on the African principles of the Nguzu Saba, the seven principles of the Nguzu Saba, and these are principles that we should be living every day, not just 7 days of Kwanzaa. Now, with that being said, brother, the last brother that spoke, he brought up Dr. Barashunga, who wrote the book African People and European Holidays, A Mental Genocide. As these so-called holidays started kicking off, we made a point on the New Black Panther Party radio to play Barashunga quite often. We started it on when so-called Halloween, we played Barashunga. So-called Thanksgiving, we played Barashunga. And so-called Christmas, we played Barashunga. And his works are very important. If you don't have that book, I suggest you get that book, again, by Dr. Barashunga, and that's spelled B-A-R-R-A-S-H-A-N-G-O. That's Barashunga. And his books is two books, African People and European Holidays, A Mental Genocide, Book 1, and then he has Book 2, a must-read, a must-read. Many of you are just coming into your consciousness. Some of you are pro-black. What might be the case? But we find that people are still, you know, one foot in, one foot out of dabbling in European traditions and European holidays. And Kwanzaa in and of itself gives you an opportunity to start embracing your African culture, beautiful black people. Our traditional African cultures are rooted, ancient. These are principles and practices that our people did long before any so-called chattel slavery or any interruption by the Europeans. And as we are coming into a mass awakening, some of us are more awake than others, or have been able to know things and come into understanding, and others are still coming into their awakening. And we must be understanding of that, so we take the time to play information to break down some of these principles, practices, ideologies. And not only that, we're presenting you words, scholarly information from scholars from our own black community. We are being self-determined. So with that being said, I think we're going to close out this last segment and play a clip from Barashunga, because as we're moving into 2022, we have to let go of these old traditions of worshiping the white man, and not just on these holidays, but in our actions, in our ways. We must embrace our culture. We are beautiful people. To the sisters, throw away those stringy, cheesy-looking wigs. Those are, and start wearing and rocking your own beautiful natural hair. Imagine a Chinese person walking around with a afro and cornrows. Imagine white folks walking around with low-cut fade and dreadlocks, even though they try, but I'm saying trying to look, wear their hair as African people. We got to cut it out. We must embrace our beautiful selves. To the brothers, stop trying to emulate or put out that the women or the imagery as close to European is beautiful and giving, you know, this complex onto the sisters. This is going to require all of us to embrace our beauty. We must stop talking down on each other, doing this light-skinned, dark-skinned shit. That shit getting regenerated. It's 2022. All the foolishness of slave culture, we must trash and throw to the side. We have a powerful history, Our story is a powerful story. Even when we talk about what happened to us in slavery, that should be from a point of empowerment for us to know that we've overcome. And in just 100 years, we've damn near taken over everything. Sure, there are vestiges of slavery that we must destroy and overcome. And all remnants of that are trying to be imposed upon us from the prison system to the unjust justice system, to the unjust ways and racist policies in the economic spheres of lending and business practices. We must fight against all forms of oppression against our people. But despite us going through colonialism and slavery, we are still the dominant race, as we are the original race. And to get our power back, we must embrace our own culture, and we must stop worshiping the white man. And I believe on a spiritual note, this is how we will end tonight's broadcast on this first day of 2022, that is, on January 1st, this seventh day of Kwanzaa. Imani, faith. I'm going to play this clip, just keeping it black and keeping it black power, from Barry Shungo, straight to the point. Stop worshiping the white man.
Build national structures. And we have to reach out from those national structures and build one great pan-African, a Latin, the world over. One great people, a renewed and resurrected people. Now, you don't have to accept it if you don't want to. But I can deal with that better, and I can't wait to get into heaven while white boys enjoy that thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess you talk all that talk, but if somebody starts messing with your money, your whole personality changes. So you know what's real. As I said, I'm not attacking anybody's faith. But let's go back to history a minute, in biblical history, into the book of Exodus, the fourth chapter, in the 22nd verse. And it gives us another key to the plan that God has for this people today. Now, obviously, it was today because it wasn't completely fulfilled back then. Exodus, the fourth chapter, the 22nd verse. And it says, and the 23rd verse, "And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh," now we'll deal with this another time. This was an argument between two black men, between the king of Egypt and a new leader of the people, Moses. There were two black men. There's a lot of questions as to whether the children of Israel were thrown out or whether they left on their own. But we're not going to go into that now. We're going to apply the principles in this text to our purposes tonight. Is that all right, McGee? All right. Now, whatever the different philosophies is fine. I like to listen to them all and draw what I can from each one of them. Dr. Ben always figures that out real quick. That's one of my mentors. We don't agree on everything. We get to religion, we'd be dead up into it. You know what I mean? "And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh," and I will paraphrase that, "thou shalt say unto Reagan." "Thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. And I say unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn." Now you have to understand that this Israel is not the settler colony of Zion Israel that's over there today. The original black Israelites today. Because when the brothers and sisters left here, we relate to the Hebrew doctrine and said we have returned home and showed them all the historical data, and they said that's true. You may have been the original one, but we empower that. So they know who they are. They're Europeans. They're not true Israelites and Hebrews. Yet, there's an affinity we have with that. We had it all the way through slavery time. We're always related to the plight of the children of Israel compared to that of our own. But the point I want to make clear here to you is that this nation, this black nation Israel, is being referred to as the Son of God. And this now begins to clarify the mystery and the theological understanding, please. But we can't just go on with what they taught us from the plantation until now. If you can draw strength from it, fine. Our people use what they had to draw strength from. I could never put down my mother. She used to walk through the house. Jesus, Lord, you've been my mother. You've been my father. You have helped me all the way through. And I saw the strength of that woman. And I was lived through that poverty and was lifted up out of it.
Yes.
So I couldn't put her down because I don't think exactly the same way she does on that. When she prayed to Jesus, I pray too. We're in harmony there. It's just a matter of approach. So I'm going to make it clear to you that I'm not attacking you in any way. When we go over in another part of Texas, it says, let my people go. The point or the principle I'm seeking to stress here is that we must, according to the book of Revelation, Babylon is fallen, is fallen. Come out from among her, my people, and be out of here. This is Babylon. There was ever a place of confusion. This place. And they go around confusing the rest of the world. People seem to know what they want to do, so they get sick. So the CIA and the FBI and everybody else. Then there's a state of confusion. We ought to come out from that confusion. We may not be able to make a complete physical exodus right now, but we got to make a spiritual exodus. We have to make a mental exodus. As we go about the business, you're going to eventually have to make a physical exodus, because when the Creator rains down his terror on these people for what they have done to us and the rest of the world, you don't want to be anywhere around them. And he's coming out to them. The book of Revelation just says in that day, Satan shall be loosed from his pit.
Yes, he is.
And you shall see him in his bald nakedness. He's not even going to bother to smile and try to fool you no more. He's not even going to say we hold these Jews to be self-evident that all men are created equal. He's going to say, nigga, your time is up. But if we're right with ourselves, with the Creator, we say, oh, Satan, your kingdom is coming down. Your kingdom is coming down, and our day is coming. And that day is written in the book of Malachi. So the Son of Righteousness arrives with healing in his wings. Lord, have mercy. That is glorious. If I can get over no other point here tonight, I want you to understand that you have within you, each and every one of you, the key to the secret of the salvation of planet Earth. You are the ones that are being called to leadership. I know it's hard to accept you. I know he's made you think so little of yourself that you are not the
strongest.
Yes, you are it. Every time he wants something new, he has to come to you. Always he has to come to you. Well, he would not have been able to build America without you.
Yes.
Can't fight his wars without you. Yes. Why, he can't even dance. Still can't fall. I'm just saying, without you. Yes. Got you caught up in that disco. Yes. I'm not going to get into that. We're supposed to be about the business of building a better people in a better world, not submitting to and giving it to the existing one.
Yeah.
Be not partakers of this world.
Yeah.
Create a new one.
Yeah.
If you believe in the Creator, you can do that. But don't go around giving me lip service. You can pray 50 times a day, turning to east, west, south, and down over there. You can read all the scripture you want. The Bible, the Holy Quran, and the last one. You want to read. But if you are not about the business of black liberation, which is the most sacred thing in the world, liberating black people, you're not talking about the business. Brother Malcolm taught you that, and there's been very few men more logical than Brother Malcolm. Said if your religion is not leading you to do something for yourself, then you need to put it down. You are no business of nothing that's not doing anything for you. As a person you're living with, if y'all not doing anything to upgrade each other, maybe y'all need to, but boy, you should try to pass it up if you can. I'm not advocating to break up a family. As we talk about the Creator's master plan, and as we continue to talk about black people need to stop worshiping the white man and start serving God as a creative force, I find many of us tend to blame our condition and our lethargy and our unwillingness to get up and move on our religion and on God. Jesus will take care of it. Let's just imagine. All we got to do is call on the Lord and you make everything all right. Now, when you got to pay your rent or your house note, do you stop at that? No, you go on down and ask the wife, but we got a job for you. So you can do it. Or you find somebody that can love you. Or you go get you some foreign aid. They call it welfare, I call it foreign aid. Whatever means you use to take care of your bills, you don't stop at this prayer. Now why are you going to leave the whole destiny of yourself, your children, and your grandchildren to just say it's a prayer? If God requires of you not only to pray, but to get up and do something, right, to support you to eat, drink, and have shelter and clothes, why does he not also require of you to get up and do something to establish yourself in the world? Stop blaming him for the fact that you will continue to carry out the white man's will. Don't put that on the Lord. The Lord don't work like that. But you know, God raised this country up. He raised up America. It's God's land. Now, the creator that I serve, that I read about, is a good creator. And he does good to people. I could not see him condoning the genocide of a whole people. And if you think God raised up the white man and put him in power over you, and that God is America, is God's land, God's country, then you say God will commit genocide against a whole race of people. Not only that, you say that he condones our enslavement. That it was his will that we be brought over here and make to drink the white man's water after he took a bath in it. Our babies made to eat our pig calves with the animals. Our women made do all kinds of freakish acts with him at night. And our little boy is turned into homosexual because of his demonic desire. If you say this is God, that this is God's country, then look what you're putting on the Creator. You better watch what you say. You might be blaspheming. One of the reasons why it's so difficult for us to get out of this, to stop worshiping the white man and to start serving God, is because we're mostly attached to white folks. When we come to talk to you about something practical, let's say, well, let's do some stuff, let's build this, which is coined phrase by the Honorable Marcus Garvey and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, do for self and kind. When these men came before you and said, let's do for self, you got into all kinds of abstract, emotional responses. Like Malcolm said one time, he accused him of coming to teach you hatred. He said, now, if after all the white men have done to you, you don't hate him, certainly nothing we can say to you can make you. While the white man talks of power, while for 24 hours a day, there is the think tanks and the brain machines with the map of the world concentrating on how they continue to control the world, who will be exterminated, who will remain, while that is going on, and he's talking about power and control, you're talking about let's all learn to live to love one another and be together as brothers. Now the ideal is good, but it must be reconciled to reality. Ideals alone do not change situations. We must be concerned, as Reverend Jeremoji of the Toronto Rapid Down said, about justice and power. Not the love. No, we got love. We don't have to worry about that. You don't have to apologize to nobody. Well, I won't be no racist to anybody. Don't even worry about that. You don't have the power to do. You can't make them hate themselves. You don't have the power to do that. And that's what racists can do. You don't have the power to be a racist. So don't even burst yourself. White folks put that on. But if that's being racist, get out of my face, you dad. All I want you to say to me, white man, is that you're willing to give over to me what belongs to me. Because you wouldn't have drawers on your behind if it wasn't for the fact that my ancestors worked so hard to build this nation for you, and I haven't got my 40 acres and my mule, which is up to work for around $200,000 now, and you ain't getting that, and you can be that much of it. I'm going to buy a parlay and just 50 million. I get my hands on that money. So don't talk to me about nothing else. I don't hear nothing. Don't bring me a pile of throw number. Nothing to get along. Let me do for myself. You just stay out of my way. Now, white folks have a problem with that. We'll talk about that later on. I'm going to be finishing up soon. One of the reasons why we're so emotionally attached to white folks, and we are. We love them. That's like somebody, that's like a woman being married to a man that sees her every night. Obviously, her mind and spirit is so messed up. She said, but I love him. Like a little dog, you kick him every time he come out, but he come on back to his master. You gonna love somebody that treats you all the time? That's not love, that's insanity. Because before you can love anybody else, you must first love yourself. Obviously, you don't love yourself, you're gonna let somebody beat up on you and just stay around. You let this white boy just do anything he wanted to. Don't even like anybody. Just go play yourself, don't know what I'm doing. So you should get whatever you can out of them. If it takes a march or whatever it takes, just get what you can from them. Don't go out there no fool. Let them knock you in your head and ride and carry on. Yes, there are things that you can do to try to get some concessions out of them so they're not going to give it up. But while you're doing that, have some wisdom enough to know that they're not doing it because they love you. They're doing it because they got them on the spot. One of my fellow clergymen, brother, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, put Budweiser on the spot. They're not giving up some hundreds and some millions to blacks for businesses and stuff because they love them. No, they're on the spot. They're going to lose all the billions of dollars, that $40, $50 billion that black folks spend on alcohol every year. Coca-Cola. So that you can apply pressure that way, but don't think it's going to last forever. That white folks going to find a way out of you. We're so emotionally attached to the white man because of the psychological damage which has been done to our minds through deceptive imagery. Down on the plantation, the white man came and he said, look, I have something for you. Pulled out this picture of this blonde, green hair, blue eyes, beard, holding a lamb with his hand like this. He said, now this is the Son of God. Knowing the black folks are spiritual people. And they being taken from the land without knowledge of self, them. This is the Son of God. Be as much like him as you can. And every problem you have, take and lay it at his feet. That is why it's so difficult for black folks to solve their problems today. They always look for some liberal white man. Come and solve the problem for them. What they're looking for, a white Jesus. When they saw Kennedy, they saw Jesus. When they saw Jimmy Carter, they saw Jesus. When he got in there, they realized that. One of those congressmen, I'm not going to mention his name, one of those black congressmen, was a black father, was going to crucify that right on the spot for life. Now this is the imagery that was put before you. Adam, Eve, God, anybody that was somebody. So now here you grow up with the idea of, I've got to take my problems to someone outside of myself. Anybody that's worth anything is a white man, not me. I'm not worth anything. So you grow up hating yourself. That's why you're trying to scar your face up, cover it up, do everything you can to make it in. Do anything you can yourself. When you see a black person, you heard it up, knocking down. Because when you look in the mirror, you're reminded, you have got this on me. This is a black and I'm black. It's cool to be black. You got the prettiest color in the world. It's those suntan lotion being sold all over the world that look like you. Old Derek walking around China. Brain the hell, you think she invented that, trying to look like you when you stand up talking about this is the fact that I'm black and it's holding me back. No, brothers, I know you heard this before, but you need to hear it again, because obviously you didn't carry out what you were supposed to carry out. Now, when you bring it up all out of slavery times, because see, even though they did that, you had good preachers like the prophets, Nat Turner, the right Reverend Gabriel Prophet, right Reverend Denmark Vest, and the Reverend Mother, Harriet Tubman. Oh, yeah. See, they preached the gospel of black liberation. Yeah. Reverend Mother, Sojourner Truth. that was the real gospel. When the church was set up, that's what it was set up for by the black man. You have to understand that. We can't go all into that today. Check chapter 23 and God's Bible and the black man's destiny. When we get to Sunday school now, in modern times, they give me a Sunday school card when children come home from school, Sunday school. So what about the today? Well, that's about Jesus, that the Son of God, he came to save the world. I'm going to show you this little picture, this little Sunday school picture of what you have. Blonde hair, blue eyes. Now, how is that child going to grow up with self-esteem? And you wonder why he has problems in the world. You wonder why there's gang wars among us, why we can beat up on each other so much. Self-hatred is where it comes from. And that's not the only base of the problem, but that's where it starts. Of course, the problem is more complicated than that, I realize it. And we have to deal with it in all fields of discipline. And I'm talking about from this area now. That's where it started at. In your family Bible, it says. Here you have a church. And black folks, as the brother says, the book Satan in the pulpit.
That's right.
They have over $10 million and $1 billion industry.
That's right.
Build these big churches and put a white man up on the same glass business on the same glass. Don't even give themselves credit for building the church. When historically, we know that Jesus was a black man. It's irrefutable. It's in the book, and I probably will talk about that some more. But here we're going to put a lie up there and say, that's what it did to the man. Move. Greatest story ever told. Ten Commandments. Talk from heaven. You know what happened to him? He got to praying Moses and he got into it so much when the directors they cut, he couldn't get out of the road. He got locked in. They had to go get him out of the middle of the sunset. He couldn't wet part of the boulevard, tracking the tail up part of the Red Sea. Almost had hit by a truck. They take him to the psychiatrist. He couldn't get out of the road. I guess some of you standing up there in the secret part before you, you know, you don't realize you're in a fantasy.
Right.
The white man made you believe in his fantasy. And as I saw that, which I listened. And every text that they mentioned before they could finish it, black folks could finish it out for you.
Yeah.
And they were applying it to that white man. And we know that Moses was a black man without a shadow of doubt. The Bible said, put your hand in your bosom. When he took it out, his hand was white. He said, oh my God, big on you now. You give the Lord some argument at first. Say, I can't go down this. I can't rap. But I can't go down and get about it. Just put your hand in the bosom. Put it in there. Get it out. He said, yeah, you want to be like that all over town? Now, it was white when he took it out. When he put it back in, it came out with his prison. What color was the man? I'm going to deal with that now, but that's circumstantial evidence. We have more factual evidence than that. Turn on the TV around Easter, the Festival of Fool's Day. All these pictures that you see, all white images. Then they had that white boy, Matt Sanders, said that I'll play Jesus in one of them. That's an ugly. And he's playing. This was a tall, beautiful black woman. Beautiful brother to look upon. Now, how do you know that section? All right, someone accept my word. Those of you who had money to travel, go to the British Museum. You get there. Here's the coin. Apple says, I want the coin of Justinian II. Take and show you the coin. On one side of the coin, you see a man with long, stringy blonde hair. Obvious Caucasoid features. On the other side of the coin, you'll see a man with cornrows and a broad-nosed, thick lips and woolly beard. And underneath that name, underneath of the first side of the coin, with the European on it, it says Justinian II. Underneath the one on the other side, our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And a white person knew that was minted about 700 or 800 of the Christian era. They know that. And as Brother Malcolm once said, the worst crime that you can commit is to teach a man to hate himself. No one has ever done that job as effectively as Europeans have done.
That's right.
They have taught you to hate yourself. When a man hates himself, he's his own destroyer. He'll work with you, for you, against himself in his own kind. And I say that these things are rooted and grounded in the early images we received and our miseducation and childhood. Now, I understand that the church was doing the best it could at that time, that our parents were doing the best they could at that time, but now we have moved on and received light. God blinked upon our ignorance, as the Bible said in those days, but now we have come to the light, and we're expected to grow up now and to deal with that knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, work with it. Just a few more points now, brothers and sisters. Now, if white people were really our friends like they say they are. Yeah, they do. They say, when, as long as they said, look, we want separation and we were fighting for integration, they were defining the process. When Brother Kwame Ture, the slave named Snoopy Carmichael, and others stood down in Lowes County, Mississippi, and made the fist and said, black power, we're going for ourselves. Then the white man comes back and says, wait a minute, hold it. You're being a racist in reverse. You don't want to separate from us. That's because he no longer defines it. He must always define your existence. That's why I've said to people, I will not allow a white man in when I'm celebrating Kwanzaa. That's mine. You got to tell him what I'm identifying with it. But if you let him in there, next thing you know, he's going to have it and gone. Which he calls jazz.
Right.
Most of you in here, your children don't even know who Charlie Yardbird Parker was. Don't even know who John Coltrane was. Why, you don't want to sit still long enough to listen. You think all music should make go to the TV Jesus is talking. You don't think you're supposed to sit down and listen to something like that. He stole that, and now he's calling it America's classical music. Song got three words in the end.
They would be saying they're supposed to have 10.
comfort black men, to spread the black woman. Why is that they feel that need? Because they know something about us that, that when we come to know, there'll be a whole change in the world. They know that we are destined to rule the world. Let me go into the book of Isaiah a minute. I'm coming to a close. No more. Listen carefully. Since an infant of days nor an old man that has not filled his days. That is, all of us are supposed to grow to a right age. Do you know when the white man, when Herodotus, the Greek historian, first came into Ethiopia, the average citizen of the Ethiopian Empire lived to be 120 years old? Do you know that white folks are hardly making past 35 today? We were living to 120? And after the old Elijah Muhammad told you were made to live 1,000 or more years. We won't go into that tonight. But the scripture said, there ain't no baby supposed to die among you, and none of you will die short of your age, it says. For the child shall die 100 years old, and they shall fill, and the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. He said, even those that are not doing exactly as they should will benefit many times from the righteous being here. And they shall build houses. They shall do what?
Build houses.
I want you to hear that word again. They shall do what?
Build
houses. And they shall build houses and inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. All this time you've been building for somebody. You have the skills to do it. Everything you need to know, we have it in the race. It's here. Now it's time to build your own. Plant your own. The text goes on to say, they shall not labor in vain. All this time we had to work from our own side. Labor in vain. Shall not labor in vain, nor bring forth for trouble. Many times your work efforts help to keep you in chains. When the slave had to make the very shackles that they bound him with. Our taxes by the very bullets that they shoot at us with. Take care of the very cops that whip up on our heads. It says that they shall not bring forth for trouble. For they are the seed of the blessed of the Lord, and their offspring with them. And it shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer. And while they are yet speaking, I will hear. That's when we get it too.
Yeah.
In the harmony, what the ancients used to call the unmoved mover, the one, the Amon Ra. When you get in harmony with the one, before you speak, you won't have to be doing a whole lot of praying. You be walking with the Creator, walking with each other. Before you move, we be so in tune, you know what to do. Where to go. How to turn. We work on it. That day will come, brothers and sisters. And the wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like a bullock, and dust shall be the serpent's meat. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountains, says the Lord. Now when you understand the symbolism of this language, it says that peace will be established in the land. And I know you'd be glad to see that. You'd be talking about it all the time while others are doing war. And it's right, we should have peace. I don't want to fight these tyrants. I know, but I know how they are. They won't leave me alone. I'm not going to let them catch me on the back. I didn't raise my babies and give them an independent black education, put that money out for those independent black schools, for them to just be knocked off. No, I don't go there. Nobody wants violence. Brother Malcolm said, I don't want violence. I don't like violence. That's why I'm trying to keep them from being violent to me. Now, if they can go around the country and build up rifle club, study karate, build up survival camps and everything, what are you doing? How are you prepared to survive and defend yourself? I'm not telling you to go messing nobody, but what you're doing to defend yourself. Because God's going to require that of your hands. He gave you these children to protect and care for. And if you don't do that, that's going to be required of your hands. Their blood is required of you. So you deal with that now. I'm not saying that you have to adopt the Alice attitude of violence. You can be perfectly at peace while defending yourself from kindness. Perfectly at peace. But how in the world are you going to be at peace if you're worried about and scared of somebody doing something to you? And you're not prepared to retaliate. one more text, man. As the brother Howard Fuller said, no, I don't have his first name right, but Neely Fuller said, maximum compensatory retaliation. Page 48 of the book, God, the Bible, and Black Man's Destiny, there's another text I want to share with you as we're coming to a close, and it says this. Then will I give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase. You know, stop talking about giving up some land. You know, these texts keep talking about giving up some land. I hope they don't read these texts that we say. And the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and their threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. In other words, there'll never be a time in the land when there is no productivity. When you're finished picking beans, it'll be time for the corn to come up. It's finished that time for the grapes to come up. Always there will be tokens for you to go and do world trade with. There'll never be a time when you'll be without, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely, and I will give peace in the land. And you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I like that. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land. Oh, I wish I had the time to go into the symbology of that now. Neither shall the sword go through your land, and you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. Now you tell me now that I'm teaching violence and I'm talking out the Bible. So we shall chase your enemies and they shall fall before you by the sword. And 5 of you shall take 100, 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you. Leviticus the 26th chapter, the 4th to the 8th verse. And you tell me you're afraid of the odds? God said that 5 of you can put 100. And 100 to put 10,000 to flood. Coming down to a close now. In the beginning, in the introduction of African people and European holidays, the mental genocide, quoted by the text there, two, several of them, and it says this, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. That's the only reason. They don't have a knowledge. As the Honorable Martin Luther King said, of all black people could have the knowledge of themselves, to know that in them is an authority that is absolute, that in them is a sovereign power within the next 24 hours. Huh? Did you hear me? Within the next 24 hours, we'd have a new race, a new nation, a new empire, not resurrected from the will of others to see us rise, but from our own will determination to rise. Irrespective of what the world might think. Therefore, my people are gone into captivity, for they have no knowledge, and their honorable men are famished, and their multitude dried up with thirst. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service, and be not conformed to this world. But be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable, perfect will of God. Perfect will of God is for the black man and the black woman to come back in power again. Come on back home, black man. Come on back and establish yourself the way you're supposed to be. Come on up and move in harmony with your people, with your brothers and sisters. And so, as we close here, I want to say to you once again, as this book was produced and presented, one of the objectives of this book and many other psychics that are being written by black scholars around the country now, around the world, is to help in the process of healing the mind. It has a therapeutic value. Yes. It is an instrument to salvage the mind, to redeem it from the shackles of the enslavement of the white man's concept of religion. To put it back in its true African perspective. That is what it's to do. Story is told of a little bird that used to fly into this African village every so often. When he flew into this African village, he would tell an amazing story. And the children would gather around and listen. And in his story, he would say, you know, I ran into the lion today. said, this story is so amazing. And his father said to him, he said, son, we will never know the truth until we hear the lion's side. Brothers and sisters,